Well, hello there, folks. It is Monday, January 28th, and it's time for some Monday motivation. If nasty thoughts about living in the North Country have popped into your head over the last week between cold temperatures and unreasonable amounts of snow, then take heart. My friends in Florida advise me that they are getting temperatures as low as 29 degrees this week. I'm sure that will last for all of 5 minutes. However, in all honesty, I consider myself blessed. A classmate of mine is in the process of moving to Idaho, for some reason, where the wind chill this week is projected to get as low as minus 60. It's all about perspective, isn't it? When I was younger, my mother kept a garden. She loved to reap the benefits of all her hard work, so she kept it tilled and planted seeds and fertilized it and, most importantly, weeded out anything that could interfere with her harvest. Naturally, I got drafted to help with the weeding process, and at 10 or 11 years old, it was something that I cared very little for. But over time, I saw the benefits of my job, as I yanked carrots out of the ground or popped beautiful red ripened tomatoes into my mouth fresh off the vine. I grew up in the suburbs, but I was never afraid of wiping some dirt off of the veggies before eating it. It always seemed so natural and delicious. One thing that I found out about the gardening process somewhere in those formative years is that sometimes you have to make counterintuitive decisions in the process of developing a healthy harvest. With certain tomato varieties, for example, I learned that to maximize your yield, you had to remove flowers in the early stages of planting. Now, for the uninitiated, flowers turn into fruit, at least on the tomato plant. So it struck me as kind of crazy that in order to produce more tomatoes, you had to cut off the very flowers that would become tomatoes. Now, you'd do this for a variety of reasons. The plant was newly planted, the flowers were removed to prevent it from expending energy on developing fruit before the plant was ready. You'd also do this to ensure that the plant would grow out more, rather than focusing on producing fruit before its season. Pruning isn't just limited to tomato plants. Naturally, it applies to a variety of bushes, trees, and vines, from roses to grapes. Master horticulturalists intimately understand the process of getting the most out of their product, even knowing how to cut them down to help them become more than they would ever be naturally. Jesus lived in an agrarian society, which means that the vast majority of his audience had at least some understanding of cultivating land or farming of some kind. They either had private gardens for their own supply, or they worked on a farm. Several of Jesus' parables centered on farming of some kind. This was a way of life for his listeners, so they latched onto it, often needing little explanation, at least as it pertained to this service meaning. In John 15, Jesus uses another farming metaphor, this time related to growing grapes. Viticulture has a long history in the Middle East, particularly in Israel. So it's not shocking that when Jesus is talking about how God works in the lives of his people, that he would use terms like this. So it's not unexpected that he would talk about vines and branches to his audience when he declares in John 15, chapter 1, that I am the true vine and my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit. Because apart from me, you can do nothing. Pruning is so counterintuitive to the uninitiated because it seems on the surface that it's harming the plant. The very idea of wantonly hacking at the vine doesn't make sense to me. If you look at a video of somebody pruning, it sometimes seems as though they are cutting at random, cutting too much or cutting too far. And while it makes sense why you'd cut off a dead branch or rid the vine of dead leaves, it seems like a waste to cut a healthy fruit-bearing branch. Why punish the branch for doing its job? The truth of the matter is that pruning isn't a punishment, and it's not harming the plant. In fact, pruning is about productivity and provision. A skilled gardener knows where to cut and how far to cut. Though it may seem random to an outsider, each cut is meticulous and calculated to be done at precisely the right place. But why? What purpose does it serve? The answer shocked me when I first heard my friend Matt Leroy talk about this subject, only to confirm it in my own research. The gardener prunes the vine because the nature of the vine is to grow where you cut it. Biologically, the vines are designed to send added nutrients and energy to the ends that have been cut. The gardener doesn't cut the branch to harm it, he does it to make it grow. And even further, where the cut is made, often two or three shoots will form at the place of cutting. So we're not only talking about additional growth, but sometimes exponential growth. All of which wouldn't be possible if the master gardener didn't lovingly, expertly, and faithfully prune the branch. You may see where I'm getting at, but Jesus said that God is the master gardener. And when we abide in Him, orienting our lives around Him, choosing to make Him the source of our life and nourishment, the byproduct is becoming fruitful. But it doesn't mean that our walk is going to be easy. It doesn't mean that He won't continue to challenge us. Quite the contrary, when God sees your potential to bear more fruit, He will push you toward that potential. I had a professor in seminary that at least claims that he was pushing me harder than perhaps other students because he saw a future doctoral student and he wanted me to be fully prepared for the next step of my academic journey, where he might not have been so harsh in grading or as nitpicky in some grammatical or citation matters. He pushed me, hoping that I would grow and blossom as a student. God often works in a similar way, using situations that we face to challenge us, to provide opportunities for pruning, for removing branches that do not bear fruit, and by promoting new growth by strategically, surgically cutting things out of your life. This isn't a comfortable process. Growing rarely is. But what I've found is that God's plan may be challenging. It may even hurt, but it does not harm. The question that I would leave you to reflect today is this: how is God pruning your life today? In what areas is He promoting new growth, and how can you surrender yourself to His movement today? Remember the words of Paul in Philippians chapter 1, which is my prayer for you today. He says, "I thank God every time I remember you, constantly praying with joy in every one of my prayers for all of you, because of your sharing in the gospel from the first day until now." And I am confident in this, and this is the key for you today. I am confident of this, that the one who began a good work among you will bring it to completion by the day of Christ Jesus. I'm believing in you, and I'm cheering you on this week, and I can't wait to worship with you on Sunday. Love you all. See you soon.